It's pretty much impossible to correct the breathing pattern of someone who's eating processed sugar because it acidifies the blood very quickly and oxygen alkalinizes the blood. Therefore, anyone eating processed sugar with any frequency is going to have an elevated respiratory rate, which often leads to decreased carbon dioxide retention and elevated sympathetic tone, which keeps you in a fight or flight state, shuts down your healing capacity significantly, and leads to an inability to heal from any common musculoskeletal injury, as well as any other type of challenge the body's dealing with at all.
Welcome to Living 4D with Paul Check. In today's episode, Paul answers many of the questions that you have submitted via social media and email to the Czech Institute. Hello and welcome to Living 4D with Paul Czech. In today's episode, Paul is going to be answering many of your questions that you have sent in over the past month. Paul, we have a lot of questions that people have sent in, ranging from issues with physical conditions, to relationship conditions, to spiritual crisis. So I'm going to get through as many of these as we can today.
Okay. I'll try to be as efficient as I can. But as you know, sometimes deep questions require deep answers. And I'm not a fluffy guy. So I'm going to, you know, do my best.
Okay, so we're going to start with a question from Joe, and his question is pertaining to spinal health. So I will read his question. I may edit some of the questions for brevity a little bit. But he says, I live with two scoliosis curvatures in my spine, one lumbar and one thoracic. I also train in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and have seen many of my training partners suffer from injuries to the spine and vertebra. I would like Paul to cover some specific rehabilitation techniques regarding spinal health. So here's my question. Injuries to the spine are some of the most common and debilitating injuries in sports today. What are some ways to prevent and or rehabilitate spinal or vertebrae injuries in sports, specifically grappling sports and MMA? And what spiritual or psychological imbalances can be linked to these types of injuries?
Okay, well, that's a very comprehensive question, which requires 4 years of training as a Czech professional to answer. So my first answer is, if you look at the Czech totem pole, which there's videos on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Paul, C-H-E-K live, I go through the hierarchy of control systems that are critical to understand for an effective evaluation of why a person has a spinal injury or why one won't heal. At the very top of the Czech totem pole is the psyche. The psyche is the grand controller of everything. And we know that because a person can choose to commit suicide and therefore obliterate the function of all control systems from breathing down the line. So the answer that we have there, as I go through some of the important parts of the totem pole to make some key points, is that your psychic, your mental emotional health is the grand influence on a person's overall state of health and well-being. Carte blanche, period, end of story. Unfortunately, the medical system is dangerously slow at catching up on that and has compartmentalized medicine into all sorts of specialties that seldom refer to each other. So people get treatment for spinal challenges as though they are robots or mechanical beings, which seldom works. It may get rid of pain, but it often returns either as a re-injury in the same level or it returns as knockoff injuries due to the fact that the original or the actual etiology or cause has not been addressed. So if you look at my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, I break what are called zones out of the body structure. So there's zone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, which is really the same structure as the chakra system. So any good book on the chakras will tell you where to look, but my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, does give you the basics of the psychological themes connected to different segments of the spine called zones, which are the direct correlation to chakras. One of the books I recommend to my students as requisite reading for HLC 2, Holistic Lifestyle Coach Level 2, is Chakra Healing by Liz Simpson. And it's an excellent book, very well diagrammed. And I think for any of you wanting to know more about the connections between the mental, emotional, or psychic aspects of yourself and which parts of the body are affected, that is the book to look at because it's digestible. I certainly have many other much more comprehensive books, but without a background in many of the related sciences, they might just be overwhelming. The low back itself is related to issues of safety and security, which, you know, I think I'll avoid going through it because I have to go, the spine contains all seven chakras. So I'd have to go through the entire chakra system, which would be too much. But I did give you the basics of it right in my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy. And there's also a diagram, I think it's on page 121. I'm not sure where it's at in the newest edition, but it'll be right around there. And it's called the piano spine diagram. And the piano spine diagram shows you the connection between the spinal vertebra or neurological segments and the muscles and the glands and the organs. So the muscles are the muscles that are fed by those regions. And the glands and organs are listed so that you can see which glands and organs, if imbalanced or inflamed or diseased, can cause alterations in the tone and function of the muscles on the relevant segments neurologically, which I'll come back to in a second. But if you look at my Czech totem pole, you see once we look at the issues of the psyche, then we have to look at issues of breathing. Breathing problems are wickedly common and they mirror back your mental emotional state to you. They also mirror back your biochemistry to you. For example, it's pretty much impossible to correct the breathing pattern of someone who's eating processed sugar because it acidifies the blood very quickly and oxygen alkalinizes the blood. Therefore, anyone eating processed sugar with any frequency is going to have an elevated respiratory rate, which often leads to decreased carbon dioxide retention and elevated sympathetic tone, which keeps you in a fight or flight state, shuts down your healing capacity significantly, and leads to an inability to heal from any common musculoskeletal injury, as well as any other type of challenge the body's dealing with at all. Now, because we're talking about general spinal issues and also the issue of scoliosis, there's many things that play into a scoliosis. There's two kinds of scoliosis, a true scoliosis and a functional scoliosis. If a person bends forward and their spine does not curve, it is not curved, then they have a functional scoliosis, which suggests that there's something going on as a compensation within the control systems I'm quickly overviewing here. If they bend forward and there's an asymmetry to their back, which typically results in the ribs on one side being noticeably higher and the muscles on that side seeming prominent relative to the opposite side, then you have a true scoliosis, which means that the body adapted to some either growth and development problem or environmental stressor in the period of birth to when the growth plates closed, or particularly sometime, you know, in the period of birth to about 18 years, depending on the situation that is behind the problem. So a lot of people have functional scoliosis, not true scoliosis, and that can be addressed quite effectively with a skilled assessment from a Czech professional. Czech professionals at level 3 and higher are trained to do the totem pole in its full capacity because it's a very complex system of assessments and corrections that have to be learned, and they're technical even for the most highly skilled physical therapists and other healthcare professionals because I've trained countless numbers of them. So we've talked about the psyche, we've talked about breathing. And then we have to look at mastication. How the teeth fit together is critical. And many people don't have normal mastication or occlusion, which means how the teeth fit together. The fifth cranial nerve, or the trigeminal nerve, is the nerve that's largely responsible for sensory motor activity. There's other nerves as well, but the chief one involved whenever you have a temporomandibular joint problem or a malocclusion is the trigeminal, which has huge connections to the limbic system and the brainstem and reflex connections to the upper cervical spine. It can go all the way down to C4, the fourth cervical vertebra. And the neck has a huge influence on organizing movement because it controls body on head and head on body relationships, which are critical to integrating movement at all levels of the body. So whenever I'm dealing with any kind of spinal pathology, I'm checking all of these things right up front, and the number of people that have these problems is very significant. In fact, I just worked with a professional baseball player for a couple of years who came to me with chronic spinal problems and a scoliosis and many other performance-limiting challenges. And one of the first things I found is he needed to go see an orthodontist. So I sent him to a biological dentist first, and then he went to an orthodontist to begin the corrections, and we were able to see significant changes in his spinal curvature and alignment and all things related once he got the right dental appliances in. And I've seen this over and over again. So once we look at that, and the other issue there is if your occlusion's wrong, then you can't masticate effectively. So that sets you up for all sorts of problems. And the most common thing we see is a narrow maxillary arch and a narrow middle third of the cranium. The cranium needs to have three even thirds. So the length of the nose, the length of the forehead, and the length from the bottom of the nose to the bottom or the tip of your jaw should be equal. If one or both parents are malnourished, there's commonly a disruption in the cranial thirds, which is called the rule of thirds, with narrowing of the maxillary arch, which results commonly in a smaller oral airway, which makes people more favorable to anaerobic sports and not so favorable to aerobic sports, because if the oral airway is diminished, they cannot oxygenate their body effectively. So there's a number of things I do for those issues, which are beyond the scope of this kind of conversation. But the key thing is that if we don't get that normalized, then it affects how you masticate, how you breathe, the regulation of the autonomic nervous system, and pretty much every function in your body, including your mental emotional state. Now, a skilled check level 3 or higher knows how to do that assessment. And then we have the inner ear, vestibular system, and hearing. If those are not running functionally, then, for example, with a hearing discrepancy, a person will unknowingly turn the dominant ear that hears well toward anybody they're talking to, which over time causes a rotation of the neck, which then makes its way through the spine and can induce a functional scoliosis or be part of a structural scoliosis. If the vestibular system's off, people will not be able to balance and integrate body on head and head on body reflexes, but most people with a vestibular system are very aware of that because their balance is noticeably dysfunctional, and it's more of an acute type pathology where somebody goes, oh my God, something happened to me. And it often happens after closed head injuries. Can happen with viral infections and things like that. But we always check for it. So then we have to look at the function of the upper cervical spine, because that's the interface between the head and the body. And the top two cervical segments have ligaments that run from they're called denticulate ligaments that run from the dura to the atlas and the axis. Atlas is C1 and axis is C2. And it turns out that the atlas is the most easily and most commonly sublux vertebra in the human spinal column because it has the most range of motion. It provides 50% of your cervical range of motion. And it's kind of like a lazy Susan, So anything from getting tackled to, vigorous, aggressive, hopefully enjoyable sex, and people getting their heads banged on headboards, to car accidents, to falls off of bicycles and horses, to getting checked in hockey, and biochemical imbalances, such as too much estrogen in the body from eating soy-based products and plastic containers and all that, can make it very hard to stabilize the atlas. And that requires very careful assessment by someone with a tremendous amount of skill. The chiropractors that are the best at that are NUCA chiropractors, which stands for National Upper Cervical Chiropractic Association. So I've seen many cases of scoliosis immediately clear up as soon as I corrected atlas position. If you want to check whether or not you're near a NUCA chiropractor, just search the NUCA Association and see where a NUCA chiropractor is. But we have to look carefully at the relationship of the functional relationship of the upper cervical spine, because it affects every single part of your body, because every nerve in your body passes through the foramen magnum down into the spinal column, and those ligaments can distort the spinal cord, disrupting normal nerve flow through every pathway in the spinal cord. Then we get down to the visceral system. So we have glands and organs, and they're all in relationship with the spine. All glands and organs borrow their sensory nerve endings from the musculoskeletal system via the sympathetic system. So I'm sorry if it sounds a little complicated, but this is how it works. So in a nutshell, what happens, anytime you have inflammation in a gland or organ, it will alter how the muscles are recruited, which can destabilize the spine and lead to chronic spinal and structural injuries. If you have anything inflaming any of the organs or glands connected to the abdominal wall, which is everything from T5 in the spinal column down, so your entire digestive and eliminative system, can disrupt motor control and core control. And that, aside from what I've just mentioned, but as far as frequency goes, although atlas problems are probably the most common cause of these issues you're asking questions about, coupled with them is people eating foods that trigger an inflammatory process, such as foods that they're intolerant of or allergic to and they don't know it, or foods that they just keep eating even though they're getting a lot of negative symptoms. So until you get the diet right and the gut's healthy, it's impossible to stabilize the spine, and anybody that thinks they can is really understudied, underschooled, and stuck in a mechanical paradigm, which is, I don't need to expand on that. I already did. Body's not a robot. Then we have the limbic emotional system, which directly correlates to the psyche, but the limbic system is a floating system because your emotions, which is the basis of your feelings, and is tied directly to your thinking process, are powerful enough to override everything, and they have strong ties to the solar plexus, to all parts of the brain, to a person's sense of self. And so anytime you have a mental, emotional crisis or challenge or problems that are not being resolved, it's going to mirror itself in the musculoskeletal system and the glands and the organs. So hopefully by now you can see that all these systems are interconnected. The body's like a spider web. You cannot pull on any one part of that web without affecting the entire web. And not realizing that is a big mistake of modern medicine. And so then we get to the sacral system. The phylum terminale is the tail end of the spinal cord, which connects to the coccyx and the sacrum. So the sacral nerves run through the sacrum and then they distribute to the pelvic floor and down the legs and to the feet. And it's about 72% likely that if your atlas is out of place, you will have a corresponding sacral torsion and low back problem, and vice versa. If you have a back problem or sacral torsion, there's about a 72% chance your atlas will be out of place because there's a kinetic relationship between the top four and the bottom four cervical vertebrae, in that they move in the same directions and everything in between moves in opposing directions. That's called the Lovett brother reactor, which was figured out in about 1908 or 1909 by Dr. Lovett, and is still true because the human body hasn't changed in 100 years. except gotten worse due to poor self-management. Hi, in this podcast, you're hearing me respond to a wide variety of questions, from structural issues to relationship issues to orthodontic issues and more. As you can imagine, I get a constant stream of questions from around the world, from people often suffering from many challenges at once, asking me, Paul, where do I start? Well, my answer is consistently the same. Start with switching to an organic diet to give your body the nutrition it needs, which also supports your ability to detoxify, and then see what challenges are left in 3 months, and we can go from there. If you'd like to add real certified organic nutrition to your diet that is easy to use, fast, and nutritious, there's no better place to start than with Organifi's product line. Organifi offers a wide variety of excellent, good-tasting, easy-to-prepare superfoods, protein powders and drinks that my family, friends, and clients use regularly, and I've had nothing but excellent feedback. And I love them myself. You can taste and feel the nutrition right away, and I know you'll love Organifi's great products. Go to Organifi.com, O-R-G-A-N-I-F-I.com, and at checkout, use the code capital C, capital H, capital E, capital K, 20 to get your 20% discount. To get to know Drew Cannoli, the founder of Organifi, listen to my awesome podcast with Drew Cannoli, number 64, titled You Be You. I think you'll love it. And when you get to know the man behind the products, I think you're going to be really excited to try them. Enjoy. Then we get to the slave joints. The slave joints are the bottom of the totem pole. They include everything from C3 all the way to L5, the wrist, elbow, shoulder, hip, knee, ankle, foot complex, and the two hemipelvis or ilium, which are tied to the sacral system but are also independent because there's not an attachment of the phylum terminale to the sacrum, so it has its own control functions that I described just previously. About 98 to 99% of all problems that people see with what I've just described as slave joints don't heal well because people overlook the control systems I've just identified. So the short answer is follow my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, like your life depends on it and like your athletic career depends on it. And if you think you have problems that require a more comprehensive assessment, then hire a Czech level 3 or 4. Of course, the most skilled people are going to be the Czech instructors, which there's 13 of them around the world. So you can always contact the Czech Institute or use our locator system on the homepage, which I think is at the bottom of the homepage. It says find a practitioner near you and get a proper assessment, proper corrective stretching, exercise, mobilization, and diet and lifestyle program so you can do the job correctly and learn what you got to learn to take care of yourself effectively. So from there, I could go off in many, many different directions, but really the nuts and bolts of it can be captured in my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, and my book, Primal Pattern Movements. And in my book, it's actually called Movement That Matters, which is shows you the primal pattern movement system, how to break movements down, etc. If you couple those books with a study of scientific core conditioning and scientific back training, you will learn a hell of a lot that is the basis of what I use for conditioning martial artists of all types, boxers and anybody in combat sports. Because it doesn't matter whether you're, a football player, i.e. American football, rugby player, jiu-jitsu athlete, taekwondo, boxing, kickboxing, anywhere where there's physical combat, the basic concepts that have to be put in place to make the body durable, flexible, and dynamic and sustainable are taught in those programs. And I would highly recommend you study my Holistic Lifestyle Coach Level 1 online program, which shows you how to implement How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy and more. So that's my short answer to a short question that's very complicated.
Okay, excellent. Let's move to a relationship question now.
Oh boy, how fun.
this is from another Paul. And I will keep it anonymous, apart from saying it's from someone called Paul.
Okay.
He says, I've been in a relationship with my female partner for nearly 7 years, and although I care for her immensely and we generally get on very well, I no longer love her. However, she frequently tells me she loves me. This has been the case for a few years now, and the pain teacher is very present in my life. My heart says to end the relationship, but my head says don't. I'm so worried that I'll cause her too much pain, as she's very sensitive to most things and this would really hurt her. Also, she has 2 children from a previous relationship, late teenage children, and I find it hard to love them fully too. I get on with them very well, but this will obviously affect them, not to mention the fact that my family love and care for them deeply. So I'd very much like you to share your thoughts on how I go about ending my relationship with her.
I understand the situation. I've coached many people in that situation. That's real common amongst people attending HLC too, for some reason. Look, I teach I, we, all. You have to be honest with and love yourself first, because you can't give love to others that you don't have. If you authentically don't feel that sense of loving connection to her, then that's very important. But I would encourage you to look deeply inside of yourself as to what it is that's changed, because you're at that magic 7-year mark, which is called the 7-year itch, where most people start looking for another relationship, not realizing that in order to get to the depth of mature love, first we start in puppy love, then we go into romantic love, then we grow into mature love. And by 7 years, you're through the puppy in the romantic stage, but you're into mature love. And that's when the shine wears off, and now you're into the depths of a true spiritual relationship, where you're looking past their physical appearance, and you're looking past even your own need for instant gratification, for someone to tell you how great you are, or whatever it is, feed you, you know, into the partnership as the spiritual pathway. So many people get out of relationships, think they're being honest, but don't realize that they're projecting their own shadow into the relationships or their attachment wounds. So one of the things to do is get a hold of the course titled Healing Attachment Wounds, which is an audio book by Diane Poole Heller, or look at Dan Siegel's works on attachment wounds and adult attachment issues, which if you want to do a questionnaire in his book Brainstorm, which is really for raising teenagers, there's an adult attachment questionnaire in there that gives you ideas about what your childhood was like. And if you both did it, you'd probably find some interesting parallels. And then listening to Diane Poole Heller's program could be very helpful. Another audio program that's very helpful is one called Finding and Keeping Love by Harville Hendricks, which is all about how to have a healthy long-term relationship. You could also see a family and marriage counselor and see if you can get more to the issues that are creating this sense of separation, or look at what it is that's stopping you from feeling the flow of love. And because you're not sitting here with me, I can't ask you how long you felt like you loved her before that started to wane. But the real thing, as I'm pointing out, is if you really genuinely don't feel like you can connect to her with the depth of your love that is necessary to be a good partner and a father figure, then it's important to be honest with that, because every day you stay in a codependent relationship, regardless of what justifications you use, is a day you stop her from being free to find somebody that will love her and the children with their heart and fulfill the role of a partner, a spouse, and a father for the kids. And, you know, life has its challenges, and really, you know, my policy is always be honest about these things. And, you know, if I was in your situation, what I would do is I would talk to her and I would share the truth of how you feel, let her know that it's not your intention to harm her, but that you love her enough to know that if you can't truly be there for her in love and in committed partnership and as a father figure for the kids, that you realize that you're stopping her from having the chance to find somebody who really is right for her in that role. Once we learn to love ourselves and we do the work, which is perpetual in a relationship, to deal with and engage our shadow and heal our attachment wounds, then each step of the way that we heal, we become more capable of loving at the level of we or loving any other authentically. And only when we've reached a good success of loving we, in other words, we can have loving relationships with others without feeling like we're losing ourselves in them or overly burdened by them. We know how to have healthy boundaries. We know when our love is genuine versus when it's just sexually driven or driven by shadow factors or archetypal factors such as mommy and daddy imprints and things like that, then we're ready to love at the all level. And in my system, anytime you're engaging more than two people, you and another, you're at the all level. So if a woman has a child, then you're at the all level because anything that the two of you do or either of you do individually is emulated by that child and therefore it affects society. As a teacher, all teachers are tasked at the level of the all, which is the highest level of spiritual responsibility, because if you mislead people for any reason, you magnify that by the number of people who listen to you and follow whatever it is that you're telling them to do. So this is an important time in your life, because if you don't practice loving yourself enough to love your partner and be honest with her, then potentially you're just acting out coping strategies or codependency strategies, which basically make the relationship go stale, and eventually the rot will emerge in any number of ways. And if there's kids involved, then you're actually teaching them that's what a relationship's about and that's how you live one, which has a negative knock-on effect for everybody involved. So naturally, this is something I could talk about for extended periods of time, but I think I've covered the basics. I've given you some good resources, and I hope that you feel supported by what I've shared and that you can apply that. And you might also want to look into the work of integral psychologist Keith Witt, W-I-T-T. He's got a course through Sounds True, which I believe is called Loving Yourself Completely, which will help tremendously because this starts with you. Remember, in any time there's a relationship challenge or crisis, there's only four things you can really do. One, work on yourself, which is the most important because you can never see any more in the other than you can see in and through yourself. And our own shadows, fears, and biases limit what we can see in the other. So whenever we have a relationship challenge, taking the time to not be childlike and jump out of it, but jump deeper into yourself to do the due diligence to heal and grow and get centered in yourself so that you can actually see the person that is your partner as they really are, not as your shadow or ego projects its own biases onto them, is very, very critical. Because if you don't do that, you can end up losing your partner and later realize you were terribly in love with them when they fall in love with someone else. And I've seen that create quite a crisis for people. So the first thing in a relationship crisis is work on yourself. The second thing is work on the relationship, which means see the relationship as more important than your personal needs, but as something beautiful that you're both contributing to, and therefore find out where there's sacrifices that each of you is willing to make to give the other more of what they need to feel whole within themselves so they have more to bring to the table in the relationship. The third option is do nothing and know that yesterday will always equal tomorrow. So you will basically freeze the relationship, which is really a misnomer because what doesn't move in love stagnates, putrefies, rots, and then becomes any number of pathologies. And option four is get out of the relationship. Some people try to do option one and two at the same time, but it's never wise because you can't really work more deeply on the relationship than you have worked on yourself, because you can't know any more about the relationship than you know about yourself, because you're 50% responsible for the experience. So if you're 10% not there and your partner's 10% not there for the kinds of things you're describing, then that creates a huge deficit, because if there's 10% of you that you can't share, that's 10% she can't access. If she's in the same situation, now we're up to 40%, and that's enough to really cripple a relationship. So those are my suggestions. I hope you find them helpful. And one thing that I wanted to share that came to my mind, and I had to stop the recording and jump into my library to find it, is one of the best courses I've ever done on shadow work is titled Knowing Your Shadow, Becoming Intimate with All That You Are by Robert Augustus Masters, PhD. It's available on audio CD. It may be in other formats. There may even be like online courses by him through Sounds True. But this is one of the best programs I've studied, and I've studied a lot on the shadow. And another phenomenal book on the shadow that's very helpful is, I'm trying to see it, it's called Owning Your Shadow by Robert A. Johnson, who was a famous Jungian analyst. He's no longer with us. But that's not a big book. It's easy to read. If you couple Owning Your Shadow by Robert A. Johnson with the teachings available through Robert Augustus Masters, PhD, via Sounds True, I would highly recommend you share your feelings with your partner and see if you can both do that work together. And then when you've done that work, see if you can apply the awareness that you gain in the relationship and give that a few weeks to really see if you guys can heal some of the challenges. Because you might find that what you're experiencing isn't a lack of love for the person, but it's a fear of a loss of freedom, or you're projecting your mother archetype onto your partner, which is extremely common for men, and women project their father archetype onto their partners, their male partners or spouses. And that leads to a lot of problems. But Diane Poolheller goes into that very beautifully, as do many Jungian psychologists. I could give you 100 books to study, but these are some of the areas I would encourage you to study, and that's the approach I would encourage you to take. So I will now sign off for good on that one. Hi, I hope you're enjoying the podcast. No matter what your physical, emotional, or mental health challenges may be, eating a high-quality organic diet is very important, but if you can't digest, metabolize, assimilate, and eliminate it effectively, you won't get nearly the nutritional and overall health benefits from your food or your supplements that you might think that you are. Well, I've got news for you. Bioptimizer's products are at the cutting edge of health science and ideal for supporting your digestion, metabolism, assimilation, and elimination. That means you get more from your food, your supplements, you heal faster, and perform better. Bioptimizer's products are excellent and created using the most cutting-edge science of today. Living 4D listeners get a huge 27% discount on the upgraded digestion package consisting of four great Bioptimizer's products that I use myself. Go to bioptimizers.com, bioptimizers.com/4D L, and use the code CHEK10 to get your awesome discount. That's bioptimizers.com/4D L, CHEK10, all in caps. I know you're going to love these products. I use them every day, and that is the honest fact. And not only do you want to look at their digestion package, you want to look at all their products to see what may specifically be helpful to you. If you have not listened to my interview with Wade Lightheart, co-founder of Bioptimizers, highly recommend you do so. He is a very intelligent man and gives a lot of great explanations to help you better understand digestion, metabolism, assimilation, elimination, enzymes. We talk about parasites. We talk about the science behind his enzymes, transient probiotics, and a lot of awesome information I think you're really going to dig. Enjoy.
Okay, let's move to a question about diet, and diet and religion combined, actually.
Oh, boy.
So this is from RV, who's in Israel, just to give you context, which will become apparent as you listen to the question. I've been listening to your teachings for over a year now, which has resulted in me examining many aspects of my physical, emotional, and spiritual life, for which I'm very thankful. I was a vegan for 13 years until recently and 7 years vegetarian prior to that. Listening to you over time has helped melt my strong convictions. At first, I was considering many aspects of your teaching while ignoring the ones about eating animals. Even though parts of me have been telling me for a while those dogmas were not doing me well anymore, I had held them very tightly. It wasn't easy to open up, to listen, rethink, and proceed to change my choices so they helped me be healthier and happier. But that's the general goal. I listened to your 6-part series on vegetarianism on Chekiva.com, and the information was very helpful and educating and helped me evolve. I was hoping you could give me your perspective on the following, which was the only thing missing for me. I was born and raised in Israel in a traditional secular Jewish family. I now prefer integral spiritual teaching rather than cult-specific, but I believe sometimes that there's still value to information provided from the spiritual teachings of various religious systems, such as in the Jewish Kabbalah. Jewish laws and regulations convey very specific information about how animals are allowed to be slaughtered and eaten. For instance, some animals are completely excluded, such as pigs, rabbits, and camels. And while animals are slaughtered in order to be later eaten, the idea is to make the process as painless as possible, even though some rabbis nowadays admit that modern kosher slaughter cannot actually be called kosher any longer. What is your perspective or your feelings about this? Do you try and source your flesh foods from places that have a specific standard for the way they slaughter, or do you not take this into account? I guess hunting would be the most ideal scenario. Smiley face.
Yes, you know, it's a very good question. And thank you very much for being brave enough to grow. You're a great example. If you haven't listened to my podcast with Tim Schief, it's quite telling. And, you know, the 6-part series that Matthew Wald and I did was designed specifically to address as many of the issues of confusion and brainwashing out there as possible, which is rampant, for all the reasons we discussed. But when we order meat here in my family, we do our best always to work with certified organic meat packing houses and distributors. And any meat packing organization that's certified organic is going to be conscious of ethical kill techniques. It's very different than a commercial slaughterhouse mass production type deal. You know, as you alluded to, hunting yourself and engaging that as a spiritual practice, such as many of my friends like Ben Greenfield and Kyle Kingsbury, as a couple of examples, do. I have several friends that are hunters that practice it as a spiritual practice. If you listen to my interview with Paul Saladino, he's another one. So those are legitimate concerns. And the problem with kosher is it's now becoming so industrialized, of course, to make money, they're going to start getting lax on the standards. But I still feel the kosher issue is a good one. There's a couple of articles that are on the Czech Institute website in the PPS section. I don't know if they put them on Chekiva yet, but they're titled The Honest Vegetarianism Inside Out, Part 1 and Part 2. And in that, I create a table in which I show the food restrictions from each of the common world religions and show very clearly that if one was to practice world religion, then there would be almost nothing for them to eat. So you have to realize there's a few factors involved. One of the key factors is mythological concepts, which is what a lot of religions in that period, or in the period of Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and the major world religions, are founded on. If you listen to my series I did, Reimagine Yourself, I go through the structure stages of consciousness. And so you'll see, prior to the mythological level of consciousness is the magical level, prior to which is the archaic. And all world religions evolved out of shamanism. That's a fact. And if you want to see that for yourself, just study the books, the two-part book series, which is very comprehensive, but I'll give it to you for completeness. It's called Rivers of Life or Faiths of Man in All Lands. Rivers of Life or Faiths of Man in All Lands by Major General Forlong. And he, if you can get a hold of the original chart, which I'm looking at right now, it's about 7 feet tall, shows you the entire history of world religion. And 98% of the people, if not 99.9%, have no idea of what different belief systems actually merged together to create their religion. And probably the worst in that regard are the Christians, unfortunately. So what I'm driving at here is that a lot of these beliefs are actually based on myths and periods of time. For example, Hindus don't eat cows, but there's many people that are starving in India and places of India, and the poverty levels are very high. So for historical reasons, because the cow provided milk, cheese, butter, and many staples that help people survive, the cow became a sacred animal. So these are just small examples that I can give. Now, another aspect is that in Judaism, they don't want you eating pork. And remember that within religions were mystics, prophets, and seers, and a lot of mystics are seers, and they were able to actually read energy fields, energy patterns, had clairvoyance, and could see all the way down to the atomic structure, which was very well shown in a book by, I believe, Christopher Bird on, I think it's called... I've got a brain fart here, but it's a book that looks at some of the teachings and shows the expose of clairvoyance by like C.W. Ledbetter, Annie Besant, and Rudolf Steiner, and how they were able to actually identify elements in the periodic table well before scientists ever identified them, just by looking at them clairvoyantly. And they even drew the atomic structure exactly as it turned out to be. So I'll try to get that notebook in the show notes for everybody, because it's quite a good book. But it's by one of the authors of The Secret Life of Plants, which is Peter Tompkins and Christopher Bird. I think it's by Christopher Bird. And so the point I'm driving at is investigations later found that a couple of things. First, I'll say that the most common meat I have to remove from a person's diet due to negative symptoms is pork. What some of the researchers found is that when people eat a pork, it produces a byproduct called detritus, which is a toxin in the body. Pork flesh turns out to be the closest to human flesh of all animals. So because of that, depending on the health and vitality of a person's immune system and their genetics, which would be influencing, for example, if your genetics come from Hawaii, they've been eating pigs, wild boar in Hawaii for a very, very long time as a staple food. So if you come from a region of the world where pork is a normal staple of the diet and or a necessary part of the diet, then you may have the genetics and the digestive ability to clear the detritus or handle it and not get the same kind of reactions. I've also seen studies in dark field microscopy where they showed that within 1 hour of eating pork, a person's blood changed to look just like that of a cancer patient, but they did not have that reaction with other foods. So the point I'm making is that quite often the mystics, the rabbis, and the founders of the different religions had insights, intuitions, and vision of things that we are only now documenting scientifically. But that's true for pork. I have not seen that to be true for a lot of the other religious restrictions, such as some religions don't allow anyone to eat shellfish because they call it bottom feeders, say they're dirty. Well, I personally think that's just, you know, silliness. This is why I teach individualized eating. That's why my course Primal Pattern Eating, which is available online, is so critical, because it teaches you how to interface with your own body and get your own guidance, which is where this whole discussion goes right back to. It doesn't really matter what other people say. If you're paying attention to your body, it will always tell you when you're eating foods that are what it needs. Your skin will tell you, your emotions, your mind, your thinking, your fingernails, your joints, your energy levels, your capacity for digestion, metabolism, assimilation, and elimination. Pretty much anything that you can imagine can be a side effect from food. And that's very well documented in the book Clinical Ecology by Lawrence Dickey, MD, which was the first very comprehensive scientific based expose of food allergy and food intolerance that I was turned onto that book by Dr. Cliff Oliver probably 25 years ago. And that's a very comprehensive book that only validates the things that are being used to justify and encourage people to do food allergy and food intolerance testing by more advanced testing methods today. So you can use those tests, but unfortunately those tests even today are not that accurate. I've done double blood draws on multiple laboratories, even with the so-called best tests, and sent one set of vials of my blood under my name and sent another set of my own blood under a fake name. And when the results came back, they looked like two radically different people. In fact, you could not even tell that they were from the same person, even though these tests claim to be much more accurate than that, which is why I teach the things I teach in Primal Pattern Eating and my Holistic Lifestyle Coaching Program and in How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, HLC1, and really throughout the Czech system. So there's another aspect here, and that is the issue of individuation, becoming an individual who takes responsibility for themselves, use their own mind, not to just fall in love with what some expert says in scientific research or some book about diet. But for everything that you look into, you'll find equally diametrically opposed experts that are equally qualified on every topic, from whether you should use cold showers or not, what you should eat or not, how you should exercise. So that pushes you into an opportunity to become an adult, pay attention to your body, your emotions, your mind, and your deeper self, your spiritual self, your soul self. And by using the techniques that I teach in my Primal Pattern Eating course and HLC training program for accessing your soul and using things like muscle testing, you can get very, very specific guidance, and you'll find, as anyone that I've taught this to that uses it effectively, your diet can change radically. There's days when I don't lift weights, especially if I take 2 days off. By the second day off, I can comfortably get by on a vegetarian diet and feel fine. But if I do deadlifts or heavy squats or any kind of heavy training where there's a lot of catabolic activity to my muscles and structure from the training, then my body is hungry as a bear for flesh foods and a lot of fat. And we all range wildly in our needs, and that also connects to our genetics. So I don't believe that there's any right way for a person to eat. I don't believe there's any diet. I believe that in our past, we had to be very intimately connected with our instincts and our bodily responses, because many things that people eat in the wild are poisonous. There's even many fish, for example, that are poisonous. So we had to test things in small doses and really be in touch with what our bodies told us, or we would kill ourselves. Think of all the mushrooms out there that are poisonous, just as an example, and flowers. There's a lot of ways you can kill yourself just walking around in the forest or eating anywhere, not knowing what you're doing. So we had a deep capacity to sense, to smell, to read the energy on things, to use our instincts and our intuition. And we've lost that because we keep believing in what other people tell us we should be doing, which means we keep putting ourselves in the position of the child. So we have a whole culture that's indoctrinated into this religious idea of a controlling father figure in the sky, and the scientists and the doctors have taken on the role of the priests that we used to get controlled by, and people are still brainwashed. And look at the health of people. Look how shocking it is to know we have the most advanced medical technologies in the world, yet we're the sickest people we've ever been, which really sums it right up. It doesn't matter what technology you're using. All these technologies that measure things going on with you, they tell you what the finding is, but they don't tell you how it got that way. They give you data. So what we have is a real serious problem, and that most doctors and therapists don't treat the actual patient or client. They treat data. So they're just looking at numbers on tests, but none of those tests tells you anything about what it was in your mind or your emotions that led you to making the choices and taking the actions that led to the dysfunctions that they're measuring with laboratory testing. So it all comes back really to embracing four doctors, taking responsibility for yourself, and putting enough time and awareness into your body through healthy exercise, breathing, meditation, things like Tai Chi, Qigong, stretching, mobilization practices, to really get more intimate with your body, doing the shadow work and the emotional healing that allows us to feel comfortable in our bodies so that we're actually in touch with our heart, with our organ systems, our body systems, our structure, and the information coming to us from those various aspects of ourselves, because those are all critical. Every single part of your body is a part of your psyche, and it has a unique function. So that's my answer. I think I've covered it as well as I could. Did I miss anything?
Would you like to share the blessing that you give over your food before you eat?
Yes. Before I eat, I put my hands over my food. I open my heart just like I would open my heart to hug Penny or hug Angie or hug my children. And I say, thank you, dear food, for the love you are giving me now. Thank you for the love you have given Mother Earth and Mother Universe. It is with great love and respect that I invite you into my being. I invite you to join me now in body, mind, and spirit so that together we can make the world a better place for all living beings. Now, the only caveat is sometimes I say, would you like to join me now in body, mind, and spirit? And I wait to read the energy. If the energy is an expansive, opening energy, the feeling that you get when someone's telling you the truth, that means that the spirit of the food is saying, yes, we would like to join you, which really is natural when you consider that everything wants to evolve. Imagine going from being a chicken or a cow or a pig or a fish to, you know, riding a motorcycle on a sunny day with your hair blowing in the wind, or making love, or feeding the homeless. I mean, it's quite an increase in freedom. So I don't really believe the spirit of the food wants to do anything but evolve. But as Steiner said, it's okay to kill something as long as you're going to do something better with it, which is a moral choice, not an ethical choice. It's a moral choice, which means, are you using life to sustain and support life? So those are some of the key issues. I kind of lost my train of thought there, but I think I shared what I wanted to share in that regard.
What do you do if the food
does not? Right. That was what I was missing. If you don't get a response from the food, my recommendation is not to eat it, because that can be the spirit of the food telling you that it's poisoned or that it's spoiled or that there's pathogenic bacteria. And though I can't tell, because if my food tells me not to eat it, I don't eat it. I just put it into the compost, or if I'm at a restaurant, I just don't eat it. I've been in many situations where sitting at the same table eating the same food, where I've gotten to know, and other people ate it, they got food poisoning. So I've had ways of checking and knowing that I'm being guided. So remember, at the basis of all food and all life is consciousness, which is really a sort of a code word for God, God is consciousness, not some religious God, but the source of all. And all our experiences are the experience of consciousness coming to know itself. I define one of my definitions of love is that love is consciousness coming to know itself or becoming aware of itself. So because really the ego creates the illusion of separation, the food we eat is really the extended self, or in Jungian terms, capital S-E-L-F, which means the whole that supports us, which we are inextricably linked to and cannot be separated from. So you could spiritually look at it as though it's not the food itself telling you not to eat it, it's the consciousness that makes you, that is also present in the food, letting you know that that particular food item or combination of food items will actually be potentially detrimental to your health for any number of reasons, such as spoilage or mishandling, etc. So that completes my answer.
Great. Moving on now to a question about dentists from Jason, who says, after learning about the Czech totem pole and the influence a person's bite has on their body, I've been referring to dentists who specialize in TMJ. I found that within the dental community, there is a wide variation of assessment and treatment protocols for the TMJ, with some patients not getting relief or even a worsening of their symptoms. From your experience, what type of credentials should you be looking for when referring to dentists who work with TMJ problems? Also, is there any reading material that you recommend to learn more about the TMJ and occlusion?
Well, the answer, the quick and dirty answer is I always use biological dentists. They're far more holistic, have a much broader, healthier approach to dentistry. Most biological dentists, for example, will test for over 150 different materials that can be used to fill and repair teeth, because people commonly have immune reactions to dental substances, which lead to all sorts of health problems that are commonly diagnosed as another problem and don't recognize it's coming from the materials in their mouth, from metals to epoxies and all sorts of stuff. Biological dentists also use things like laser therapy and other therapies that are non-invasive to treat things like root canals, where traditional dentists will just pull the tooth. And there's a great book called The Root Canal Cover-Up. I don't remember who the author is, but it's in my library. The Weston A. Price Foundation is probably going to have a bunch of stuff from Weston Price's work, which is quite profound. He was a dentist. Off the top of my head, the only books I could give you would be standard anatomy texts. I did advanced training and extensive training in the temporomandibular joint complex and occlusion. So there's, my training came through experts such as Mariana Rocabato, who was a PhD physical therapist and worked in the dental department at the University of Santiago, Chile. I used to teach occasional lectures at the Los Angeles Chiropractic College, and one of my buddies there was Dr. Daryl Curl, who was the editor of the book A Chiropractic Approach to Head Pain, which I wrote a chapter in. And you might want to look that book up. It's out of print now, but it has a lot of interesting and useful stuff on the jaw. So A Chiropractic Approach to Head Pain, edited by Daryl D. Curl, DDSDC. Another book that's flashing into my mind, I lost it there. Another one that's probably good. There's a very comprehensive book that has some good basic information on how the head, neck, jaw interacts with the rest of the body. It's called Clinical Biomechanics, I think it is. Biomechanical Actions and Reactions by R.C. Schaefer. I may have the title slightly wrong, but it's by R.C. Schaefer. I'll get the right. It's in my library. It's a very good book. I spent a lot of time studying it and mastering it years and years ago. But even though it's an old book, it's, again, it's all based on anatomy and how the body functions. So those are some of the books off the top of my head. I mean, I have a whole library full of this kind of stuff, but a lot of it's very, very technical. Now, there's another approach that's called myotronics, and it's a system that analyzes the temporomandibular joint and the musculature using electromyographic responses and jaw tracking technologies. And there's a couple of books by that person, but again, they're very, very technical. But one of the points I'm making here is if someone has jaw issues, it's always good to find someone who uses the myotronic system of assessment, because it's very objective and very accurate. And I've worked with many, many dentists, and I was trained in that technique through the St. John Institute many, many years ago when I did my temporomandibular joint training through the St. John Institute, which was also quite comprehensive. And the neurosomatic therapy people, which have kind of taken over the St. John type approach, have a lot of good information on the jaw and courses on that as well. Neurosomatic therapy. There's websites you can go look at. Other than that, I'd have to go look through my library, but I think I've given you the most important resources. The book by R.C. Schaefer is Clinical Biomechanics, Muscular Actions and Reactions, if I remember right. But Penny will get you the right title. I have so many books in my head, man, I can't remember them all. I've forgotten more than I can remember. So I always giggle when people tell me, geez, how do you remember all this stuff? And I say, well, if you knew how much I'd forgotten, you'd probably be amazed to know that it's more than I can recite by far. So hopefully that gives you some tips.
Excellent. Let's move to a question from Ben, who says he has a weird question about spirit animals.
Good.
And he says, my dad passed away pretty suddenly this past Saturday. So this was 5 days after he wrote this letter, 5 days after his dad passed away. My mother is half Native American, and she told me when her aunt died, a medicine woman contacted her about a ritual where you twist tobacco in your hand, talk to the person who died, and then bury it. The idea being that 3 days later, their spirit should visit you. So I tried that and nothing really happened. But I did notice 3 deer in the backyard on the 3rd day, and I've never seen deer around here before. It seems a little too strange to be a coincidence, and I'd appreciate your thoughts on this if it makes sense.
It does make sense. You know, on my YouTube channel, there is a pretty comprehensive video on what power animals and spirit guides are that I put up as part of the marketing for a course that Angie Check and I taught on power animals and spirit guides. I think you'll be blown away with the depth that I share and the explanations. But one of the reasons I'm bringing that up for you is that power animals are actually expressions of our psyche, and they are very woven into our genes, because within us we have the genes from the entire history of evolution. So we have a long, long history of intimate connection to relationships and codependency on animals and nature. And because most people are not afraid of animals, that's one of the reasons the psyche communicates to them through animal forms. My experience, which is quite extensive in this area, is that spirit guides who are potentially people that were human or are human but are in another dimension because they've moved out of the third dimensional reality into the 4th, 5th, 6th dimensions, for example. Now, this could even be your own ancestors, can communicate with you, but often will not manifest in your dreams or in your visions or meditations as human beings, because many people have a much harder time with engaging a human being coming to them that way because of the social stigma against that and the name that is given to those type of things is ghosts. So it puts people sort of up against their social conditioning. So many spirit guides that are coming to help you will come to you as an animal. Now, I can also tell you of an example. I have to ask Penny, can I tell him about what happened after your parents died and I told you who was there? Penny's mother died first, right? Her father died of cancer, and then a year later, her mother died of cancer. Oh, a few years later. But she went through quite a crisis, as you can imagine. It's hard to lose your parents that quickly and that close together, especially when you love your parents. And I just had a sort of an intuition that I should check for her to let her know, you know, if her parents were still nearby or what was going on. So without telling how I do that, because that's too much to get into, I basically connected to her parents' souls and asked my soul first where I could find them. Well, I ended up back at her parents' farm in France. And then what happened was is I used my soul to call forth her parents, and the first thing that happened was a big owl appeared. And I spoke to the owl, and it said, I forgot Penny's mother's name, but she said, it's me. I'm Penny's mother, and I want you to let her know that I'm fine. And there was a conversation, and then all of a sudden, a fox appeared. And the fox came from outside of the property under the fence and approached me, and it was her father. So here's two cases where people that are on the other side actually appeared to me as animals because of their own preference to be that animal, to appear that way. And just to sort of put the icing on the cake, when I told Penny this, I said, you know, Penny, when I did this soul connection with your parents, your mother showed up as an owl. And Penny kind of got big eyes and said, well, do you realize that the name of my parents' farm is?
Les Chouettes.
Which means?
The owl.
The owl.
The owls.
And her mother also was an artist that drew and painted a lot of birds. And she was a bird, what do they call them, ornithologist? She was an ornithologist. So once we leave the body, we have the ability to take on pretty much any form we want to. And so there's an example of something right out of my own family where two family members came back in animal form because that's just the form they chose to express their freedom in the afterlife. And also people can shapeshift. They could appear to you as an owl, but then appear to you as themselves in a dream or in a vision. It depends on how they feel about themselves and what the situation is. So did that answer the question?
Yep. Do you remember if a deer have any significance as a spirit animal or a
The deer has
guide?
A lot of significance as a spiritual animal, a spirit animal. So the best thing to do is just go on Google and type in deer as spirit animal and you'll get many websites, or you can look into the book Animal Wise or Animal Speak by Ted Andrews, and he catalogs those out. And he doesn't have every animal, as you can imagine, because there's over a million animal species out there, but the deer is in there for sure, and he even gives you meditations and things that you can do on these different spirit animals. And the meanings of each of the animals also changes from tradition to tradition and culture to culture. For example, if you look in the Chinese culture, what an animal symbolizes, it'll be very different than the Native American culture, which can be very different than the Siberian culture, which can be different than the Jewish or the Greek culture. So it's best to start with the culture that is connected to your family lineage.
All right, Paul, our next question comes from Sophie. And she says this is a bit of a personal request, but something I've had on my mind or in my heart for quite some time now. You've managed to offer me, a quite science-educated master student, a lot of new and enlightening perspectives, not least by talking about spirituality in a way that does not draw the boundaries of religious, traditional religions, does not dismiss science, and remains very critical, yet integrates it all. I would appreciate if you could share some of your thoughts and insights on what is diagnosed as mental health conditions in the Western medicine system. Specifically, I would love to hear you talk about psychosis and schizophrenia, if you have any knowledge to share. My older brother was diagnosed with this about 8 years ago as a young adolescent and has been taking psychopharmaceuticals since, but hates to be on pills and has consequently developed a story of himself that is full of self-pity, contempt, anger, and low self-esteem. He is also extremely depressed, often has very low energy, very little vision for his life, and yet he can be a caring and loving person in our family. I would love to somehow help him shift his limiting beliefs of what this condition makes out of him, and I'm hoping that a different perspective may help him. I have heard that in some traditions, people who have experiences like my brother are actually perceived as shaman and not just treated like there is a sick part of them that needs to be shut down by chemicals that can cause horrendous side effects. Unfortunately, the medical system here just prescribes meds for an indefinite amount of time, and there is no holistic approach and a lack of understanding about what is actually happening. I do believe this to be a mind-body-spirit problem, so I'm very curious what your views are on this, and I would deeply appreciate if you could share on it.
Okay, I'll do my best in the time I have. It's something I've talked about a lot on my PPS program. One of the regular students on there is a schizophrenic, and I've spent hours talking to him about that. Once you join the PPS program, even if you buy one lesson, I think you get 90 days access to my coaching calls, which was over 500 hours, probably 550 hours of recording calls. And one of my students did an index. I don't know where to find that, but once you get on the PPS website, you might be able to track that down and look for things in regard to your question that are relevant. Before I forget, there's a program, an audiobook program that's very good on exactly this topic called Awakening Kundalini, The Path to Radical Freedom by Lawrence Edwards, PhD. And this is one of the best overviews and insights into this issue. Also, this is quite nicely covered in the book Vibrational Medicine by Richard Gerber, MD, where he very beautifully outlines how, sadly, there are countless numbers of people in psych wards and on the kind of modulating drugs that you talk about that are actually going through a kundalini awakening, which can come by a variety of means, such as exposure to strobe lights, various types of vibration. It often happens to truck drivers because they are driving long hours and the reflectors on the road have a strobe-like effect on them. And also the vibration through the floorboards of the trucks. People operating large equipment like bulldozers and cranes can have spontaneous kundalini rising, which creates very classic symptoms of schizophrenia. I've seen many cases of this happening to people that go to either get into the use of psychedelics and overdo it or go to so-called shaman and people like that in jungles all over the world and do multiple exposures to ayahuasca and other things like mushrooms and cactus. And it opens their psyche up too much. So that's a long discussion, which I've had on a number of podcasts over the years. I'd also like to say I have a podcast that'll be coming out in the next 2 months, probably with Greg Shamos, actually pronounced Shamouse. And he is someone who coached with me for 2.5 years to overcome OCD and other related disorders. And we get into all this stuff in detail in that podcast. So, a couple of things. One, I rarely ever see those drugs being helpful to anybody. Unfortunately, the medical system being so poorly integrated and so terribly non-holistic doesn't really, A, interface with skilled psychologists. And even if they did, that creates a problem because like any other profession, it's as hard to find a good psychologist as it is to find a good dentist or mechanic or doctor. And there's so many fields and belief systems in psychology. It's a quagmire, just like the medical system is. But if we look at what issues I've seen helpful, and I've worked with a lot of people with these various types of mental, emotional problems in my career, the first thing that I always do is take a four-doctor approach because the biochemistry of the body is the interface with the subtle energy systems of the body, which you would know as meridians, which feed into nadis, or which are finer meridians, which there's, you know, well, in some texts they say 144,000 nadis. But basically, the chakra system is the interface with the subtle aspects of our body or our spirit soul complex, which is really the essence of who we are. Our bodies are expressions of our spirit soul complex. So it's hard because there's many steps I'd have to take you through, but if you just take God as source or consciousness as source or pure potential as source, or the zero point field, then that's the source of all vibration and the flow of energy and information. And so each idea construct, be it a planet, star, galaxy, solar system, universe, plant, animal, tree, human, is an expression of the potential inherent in source itself, whichever name you want to give source. But because each thing is an expression of an archetype, and an archetype is the root language of consciousness, so archetypes are the primal ideas that our psyche works with to make meaning out of anything. So all mothers are expressions of the archetype of the mother, all fathers the expression of the archetype of the father, all trees express the treeness of a tree or the archetype of the tree, etc. So consciousness manifests itself in fields of energy and information, which feed into our chakra system. The chakra system actually has three levels to it. The highest vibrational level is the mental, which relates to the noosphere or the field of mind, which moves faster than light. And there's research showing that. You can look at the research of William A. Tiller, for example, the book Science and Human Transformation, or you can look at Cynthia Dale's book, The Subtle Body, which is the an encyclopedia of subtle energy anatomy. And she's got lots of great work in this regard. You can look at the Mystery Teachings series by physicist Teresa Bullard on Gaia TV for a very thorough explanation of this. You can look into Joe Dispenza's work for a very thorough explanation of these things. And there's many, many other experts. But the point that I'm making is that consciousness feeds into us as a flow of energy information. And through the chakra system, which you have a mental chakra that the highest vibration steps down into the astral chakra, which is the next step down the vibration. And the astral chakra feeds down into our etheric body, which is the interface between the physical cells of our body and the higher dimensional realm. And the etheric system basically feeds into the energy fields created by the metabolic activity and biochemical activity in our body, which produces activity that's very, very easily measured in the electromagnetic spectrum. And the human body is a construct of atoms. So Nassim Harriman says we have on average 100 trillion cells, which is made, each cell is made of approximately 100 trillion atoms. And in each of those atoms has a neutron, proton, and an electron. And if you look at the work of French physicist Jean Charon, he goes into deep physics on how the electrons themselves carry consciousness and transfer information. So no matter which way you go, we're a very complex weave of subtle information manifesting itself in physical form. And what I'm getting at here is the diet that you eat determines the biochemistry of your body, and those fields that are produced determine what you can or cannot access. Because if you, for example, drink a bunch of coffee, anybody knows that it winds you up. So it even can make you jitter, shake, and sweat. So there you see that the influence of the caffeine is that it brings your cell frequencies up. It causes everything to buzz at a higher rate. It causes things like metabolism to speed up. And therefore, if you were thinking of this as playing a piano, drinking coffee moves your cells toward the high notes or the right side of the keyboard, but eating a bunch of fat by itself for most people would take them to the low notes or to the left side of the keyboard. But then when we start eating chemicals that are coming in from farming and food processing, we're bringing chemicals and environmental toxicity and heavy metal poisoning and estrogens and chemicals from plastics and packaging. We bring things into our body that produce chemical signatures and therefore energy signatures that are not in the normal field of receptivity. They're either too high or too low, or they're convoluted frequencies that create dissonance in the body. So what I'm describing is that the importance of starting at the basic level of eating organic food and following the teachings, for example, in my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, my Primal Pattern Eating online web-based course, which comes right out of HLC2, and getting the body detoxified, particularly of environmental toxins and heavy metals, which any functional medicine practitioner can test for these days, restoring the health of the gut. Most of these people with psychological disorders have not only got leaky gut syndrome, but they have fungal and parasite infections. And funguses and parasites poison your body with a wide variety of chemicals. For example, mycotoxins are some of the most powerful, deadly chemicals in the world, and they use them in biological warfare as chemicals to be used to kill people very quickly and effectively. And so when you look at the herbicides, fungicides, rodenticides, and pesticides that people are consuming, plus Roundup, which kills off your microbiome and screws your microbiome up, you have chemicals coming into our body that start mixing with each other and disrupting cell physiology and frequency rates, and every single gland and organ and tissue in your body operates in a frequency range. So if you think of Dan Siegel's definition of what the mind is, mind, an embodied and relational process that regulates the flow of energy and information. The key word there is embodied and relational process. What that means is that your mind cannot be known as a thing in and of itself without a body in this dimension of reality. And so the mind is actually as fused into your body as wet is to hydrogen and two parts oxygen. So if you take hydrogen and two parts oxygen, what happens is you get an emergent H2O hydrogen, what?
Two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen.
Sorry. Two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen. I'm trying to go fast because I'm running out of time. Well, if you take two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen and put them together, then you have an emergent property called wetness. But until you mix those chemicals together in a chemical relationship, you don't have the emergent property of wetness. The emergent property of all the biochemical reactions in our body is consciousness. And in order to keep the stream of consciousness coherent, and to keep it on the wavelengths that we need to be healthy people and interface with the world and ourselves effectively, you have to have the biochemistry of the body within healthy tolerances, but that's extremely rare today, and toxicity is very, very high. And then you have all the influences of the media, of iPhones, of programming through screens, be it games, pornography sites, subtle subliminal programming coming by way of light frequencies, and the list is very, very long of ways you can actually distort a person's psyche and have very, very damaging effects. And then you look at the electromagnetic pollution and things like microwave ovens and many of the things that have been shown to damage telomeres and therefore disrupt and damage the DNA. The chemicals that I spoke about in farming were suspected all the way back in 1947 by Francis Marion Pottinger to create a germ spore injury, which was germ spore was what they used to call DNA before they really called it, knew what it was. But they were, you know, Francis Marion Pottinger already suspected that these kinds of chemicals were damaging the DNA. The DNA is a cosmic antenna system that interfaces with all the frequencies I've just described, and they're the frequencies that you have to have access to regulate the physiology and function of 100 trillion cells. And what people call junk DNA is actually the DNA we use to communicate with all these other different frequencies that are outside of the normal DNA that most people think of as the functional DNA, which some experts have come to the same conclusion that I have through spiritual investigations. So the point I'm really making is that whenever you're dealing with a schizophrenia or any kind of psychological pathology, the first thing you got to do is go back to four doctors, because lack of rest is very easy to bring on psychological pathology. All you got to do is look at the research on women who give birth, and in the first year, due to sleep loss, their brain can shrink 1 centimeter. And it can literally shrink inside the skull because of lack of sleep. And anybody that's been through that experience knows that women can get very unruly because they're so sleep deprived and, you know, often can't even have a shower or brush their teeth for 2 or 3 days at a time because constantly needing to nurse children. So long and the short of it is sleep deprivation itself can induce psychological pathology. And remember, anytime we have a weak link in our own genetics, which we all do, the chain's only as strong as the weakest link. So when you start adding up all the things that can manifest our genetic weaknesses, be they psychological or physiological, then you have to say, well, what are the foundation principles that we have to address that are going to minimize the likelihood of exposing ourselves to these genetic weaknesses? And that turns out to be the four doctors based on my own, you know, lifetime of research. So the first one I've talked about is sleep, but that's cheap and easy. So my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, tells you how to prepare the sleep environment and all the issues that are relevant there. Then you have to look at the issue of diet and following the suggestions I make for eating right for your metabolic type and paying close attention to that, as I suggest in my Primal Pattern Eating course, because it can change radically. And then you look at Dr. Batman Gelage's book, Your Body's Many Cries for Water, and he's an MD, and he states right in the book, as little as 1% dehydration of the central nervous system can cause significant psychological diseases. And of the countless hundreds of people that I've worked with that have been to psychologists and psychiatrists, 0 of them have ever asked about anything to do with hydration or diet or lifestyle issues. So, hydration is very critical, and the quality of the water is very important. And there's guidelines for that in my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy. Then you have to move the body effectively, especially when someone's got a history of mental, emotional trauma or developmental trauma or in utero trauma or psychological problems within the family or drug addictions within the family. The body mirrors our emotions. There's an old saying, feelings buried alive never die, but they do manifest themselves in your body. So whatever the buried thought, feeling, or emotion, repressed feeling, thought, or emotion, or painful thought, feeling, emotion that you can't effectively heal is a form of energy and information that then draws cells into a formation that reflect the energy and information of the negative thought, feeling, or emotion. So it's no secret at all that huge percentages of people with diseases, in particular cancer, are actually suffering from unresolved thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And often when those are dealt with effectively by therapists, they go into spontaneous remissions, even of severe end-stage cancers, some of which people are told they're going to die within the next few days. And there's been complete spontaneous healings where there's no sign of tumors, sometimes as big as grapefruits. They're just gone. And this is well documented scientifically now. So then you have Dr. Happy, which is the fourth doctor and is actually the chief physician, because Dr. Happy is the chief of your values. So Dr. Happy, as is in my new edition of How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, which has been out for a while now, is the chief of, A, what is happy making for me? And am I doing the things in my life that are happy making so that I can engage the world and have a sense of joy, wholeness, and connection within myself and nourish the child aspects of my soul, not just being on this treadmill of making money and doing what everybody else expects me to do or wants me to do or tells me to do, which will bring anyone into a psychological crisis at some point. So within the domain of Dr. Happy, we are responsible for doing things that are happy making for us, so we stay connected to ourselves and others and have enough time expressing our creativity in ways that are joyful and fulfilling to us. But then Dr. Happy is also responsible for establishing the values around when I rest, what I eat, when I eat, how I eat, and any issues of diet, and when do I move and how do I move my body to keep it healthy. So if you don't address those four foundational principles, then really you're going to do nothing but run from doctor to doctor, which will be from pill to pill. Now, another person I would highly recommend you look into is Dr. Dan Siegel's work. He is a psychiatrist who's got excellent, very well thought out, grounded techniques for dealing with psychological issues. And he's got great books such as The Neurobiology of We is a great one. Mindsight is a great one. I mentioned Brainstorm earlier in the podcast. He's got one called Mind. He's got one called The Developing Mind. Those are all books that I've studied. But, you know, this is the kind of person that you might want to have your brother seek to have as his doctor. So I don't have time to go into the expansive approaches, but if you listen to my podcast with Greg Schmaus, you'll get a lot of an expose of what we did in his 2.5 years to overcome OCD and related challenges. But the fundamental basis of all these things is really the same. It's a breakdown in the integration of the body-mind complex of the human being. And to quickly address your last question, because I have very little time before I have an appointment, it is known traditionally that people that were schizophrenic were often basically going through a shamanic initiation. And so when you look at what schizophrenia is, it's somebody who's in many realms or dimensions of reality, if you will, at one time. So it's like the filtration system of the ego is broken down. And what's happening to them is exactly what happens if you take enough LSD or mushrooms or DMT. They're being opened up to many dimensions because the ego cannot filter the frequencies and the energies from these different dimensions. So a person like that, if they can learn to manage it, actually has the abilities a shaman has, which is to move into other dimensions that are connected to the pathology and many other factors within the individual. And in those dimensions, they can find out what sort of forces or spirits or levels of consciousness or types of consciousness, for better or worse, are interacting with that person, which can get into all sorts of things from ancestors to curses and you know, ancient shamanic approaches were kind of like that. But some of these things are still very, very alive and real. For example, I've worked with many people that have entity possessions that manifest as both multiple personality disorder and or schizophrenia. So anytime I work with someone that has that challenge, schizophrenia in this case, I teach them how to work with it, because if it's managed effectively, it makes that person capable of seeing and interacting with many, many other dimensions that are actually constantly in play and interplay with human beings in the earth plane all the time. And as a medicine man, spirit guide, I work with these types of issues all the time, as does my wife, Angie Check, who is another person you could consider consulting for your brother, because she's got a lot of skill in these areas and is a highly trained shaman. So hopefully that gives you an overview, But the nuts and bolts is start with the four doctor approach, which is outlined in my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy. And I also have an ebook titled The Last Four Doctors Delivering How to Get Healthy Now that takes you through how to apply that much more deeply than the current edition of How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy is. So hopefully that's helpful to you. I could give you mountains of resources, but on a podcast, I can only do so much. So if you apply what I've shared with you and follow up with some of the programs I just mentioned, I think you're going to find that there is a blessing hiding inside of your brother's situation, but it's really just a matter of getting him the right support and doing the things that are necessary to minimize the psychic leakage by integrating his body and mind more effectively so he can move towards wholeness. Aho, Great Spirit.
Thank you for listening to this Q&A edition of Living 4D with Paul Check. Follow Paul on Instagram and Twitter at Living4D Podcast or on his YouTube podcast channel, youtube.com/Living4D with Paul Check. You can watch more on Paul's blog at paulchecksblog.com and at the Czech Institute's new streaming media channel at chekiva.com.